You're fired. Donald needs to get out of the race. This is Chris Blake on the right.
Peter Caroon on the left. Medicaid expansion, we're going to talk about that. It's come and gone. Nothing's happened.
Book of Mormon, Broadway play comes to Utah. I'm Natalie Gochter in the Political Center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. But first, this news. Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I represent the Political Center, and I am in the studio today with Chris Blake, political guru representing the political right.
Great to be here, Natalie.
Always great to have you in the studio, Chris. And then on the left, we have Peter Caroon, the chairperson of the Utah Democratic Party. Welcome, Peter.
Great to be here as well. My first time.
Yeah, well, we're happy to have you. And we're going to start out by talking about Senator Hatch. And so I'm sure you'll have some fun things to share there, Peter. But we've got a senior senator. How long has he been in office now? It's beyond 36 years.
Yeah, he was elected in 1976 or 8.
Yeah. My wife was on his junior committee of some sort when she was in high school, or maybe it was elementary school. And
well, we need to sign her up for the 2018 campaign then.
Help me if I'm getting this right, but Peter Ashdown ran against him. Am I getting this right?
Yeah.
Some time ago.
Anyway, ran against him.
It was my favorite parade float in the 4th of July parade when I saw this RV come by that was like very, very old and rattled, and it was, you know, vote for Ashdown or whatever. And you're going, can't you do better than that? Looking for some convertible or some fancy car. And then as it passed, on the back it said, this RV was new when Senator Hatch was first elected.
That's so true.
And that was a long time ago.
I can appreciate the political theater of that, yes.
Yeah, it's been a long time since then. But Chris, how do you read? We're hearing word that Senator Hatch is keeping the door open for another run, even though he publicly committed this would be his last term.
Yeah, I think it's something that he probably will and should be looking at. And something that the voters of the state of Utah are going to have to make a decision on whether that's appropriate or not. But, you know, I don't want to get too far ahead. It's appropriate for him to be fundraising and supporting his colleagues, trying to build the majority. There are a lot of reasons that he's doing the things that he's doing and being an effective senator. And whether he chooses to run or not, I mean, 2018 is a long time
long
away,
way.
So I'm not too worried about it.
Peter, what would you think if Senator Hatch said, I'm in for another
term? Somehow there always seems to be a groundswell of support for Senator Hatch running again when the election gets close, even though he said he wasn't going to run again. You know, at some point, I think it's going to be a tough race for him. Once you've been in over 40 years, people are going to start saying, well, are you now the problem instead of the solution?
Yeah. And yet, if you look at him, he has Secret Service protection at this point. Isn't he third in line?
He's
in
the
succession?
President pro tem on the majority, on the Republican side,
yeah,
right
so
now.
So it would go VP, Speaker of the House, and then Senate pro tem.
Correct.
He used to come to events in a small Ford cramped into the front seat. Now he's got his bodyguards and in his big SUV. So it's been quite a change for him.
I remember when he was first reelected for this present term, someone who was there for his inauguration, however you call it, his swearing in, said when they came back, Senator Hatch will die in office. And they said that in reverence. They just basically said that with the power that he has and the ability to do good for this country, who would leave it?
Well, he's such a great man and a great person. I really appreciated his service over the years. But he's in such good shape. He may live forever. So I'm not sure that he can stay in Senate that long.
Well, I also had fun this week when I saw, I mean, this is an example of why we all love Senator Hatch for some of the things he does, at least speaking from the political center. He called out Senator Ted Cruz on taking on Mitch McConnell.
He did. And, you know, you have some interesting dynamics playing out in Washington right now. The Senate is very much a tradition-bound body, and they feel like Senator Cruz has overstepped his bounds. Senator Cruz looks at it more from a political angle, saying, I'm going to attack the entrenched interests. D.C. is the problem. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that would agree with him. And so, you know, I tend to believe that you get more done with honey than with vinegar, if mm-hmm, you will. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are other people that don't always feel that's the case and want to raise the misery index, as Speaker Hughes would say, and make it more difficult for those that are there and force change that way.
Right. Yeah. Interesting. In our next segment, we're going to talk about the Boy Scouts of America decision and the relationship with the LDS Church. But before we do that, let's talk just a little bit more about Washington. And Chris, I'm hoping you'll set this up. Senator Mike Lee and his most recent efforts to have the scoring of Obamacare be done. angering his Republican colleagues. What happened?
Yeah, as I understand it, and what Politico and others reported is that one of his staffers on the Conservative Leadership Fund, I'm not exactly sure the name of that committee, sent out an email to some conservative groups suggesting that they should score an upcoming vote dealing with Senator Lee's plan to defund Obamacare. And this got out, angered some of the Senate Republicans, particularly Senator McConnell and Senator Cornyn, basically because as I understand it, the parliamentary method that he planned to use would have upset the tradition that the Senate
so
normally runs by.
Tradition-bound body.
And
yeah.
Then you had, doubling up, you had Senator Cruz wanting to use the same issue, I think on the Export-Import Bank, but I could be mistaken what his issue was, but a similar type of tactic. And so they ended up confronting Senator Lee and others about it. Based on what I saw, Senator Lee went back to Senator McConnell, apologized, said he didn't know this email was going out, and said, "You know, I want to do things the right way. I believe strongly that this should be defunded,
but I want to do it.
But
the
I
right
want to
way.
Do it the right way." And all indications are that Senator McConnell accepted that, and they've moved forward and in a positive direction.
So, Peter, give us your take on this, especially given that Senator Lee continues to dabble in a part of the U.S. Senate that is, you know, in the Ted Cruz world and sort of in the.
Well, I think he's one of those young senators who's trying to challenge the establishment. And, I'd like him as a person. Unfortunately, I think he wears political blinders. And how many times are the Republicans going to try to overturn Obamacare? Millions of people in the United States now have health insurance, and I think it's only proven to be a good thing. Others may disagree. There's obviously some things that may need to be changed, but let's be a senator that tries to find a solution, and if the ACA needs to be changed, let's make the changes, but quit trying to overturn it. We have millions of Americans whose lives have been saved and who have health insurance that otherwise didn't in the past.
Yeah. So let's stay on the political left for just a minute. We have fun in the studio sometimes trying to think who the Democrats in Utah will put up to run against people. We know in Mia Love's case that it'll be Doug Owens. What are you seeing in the governor's race? Because that's right around the corner. And then eventually, Senator Lee.
First of all, we're thrilled about Doug Owens getting back into the race. He waited probably too long in the last race. I think it was not until March before he got in. We're thrilled to have him in, and I think he's going to be a great challenger to Mia Love. We haven't really seen much of anything coming out of Washington from Mia Love, so I think Doug will give her a good run for her money again. And in terms of the other candidates, it's a secret. We don't want to turn our playbook.
Chris.
We don't want to turn over our playbook to James Evans just yet, but we'll be ready and waiting to take on the governor and other candidates.
Chris from the right.
Well, we hope that we're excited to see that candidate. Hopefully, it comes before 2016 when they announce that big moment. But there certainly are some candidates I'm sure that they're talking to, and we'll get Governor Herbert is going to win re-election pretty easily, as is Senator Lee. It will be interesting. I think Mia will be a much stronger candidate in the position she's in. She has gone back to D.C. and I think done what I would hope she would do. She's put her head down. Mm-hmm. She's worked hard.
Learn it.
She's learned learning the process, and she hasn't been what a lot of people thought she'd be, is out there and everywhere.
Taking advantage of every media opportunity.
Absolutely. And yeah. So I give her credit. She's a serious congresswoman. She's going to do a great job, and she's going to be difficult to beat.
I had someone yesterday say to me that they thought that being a general election, it would help Mia Love because of voter turnout. And I actually disagreed because I thought that increased voter turnout would help Doug Owens. How do you guys read that?
Well, looking at past elections, Democrats and independents don't turn out during non-presidential years, and then they turn out during the presidential years. I remember being in a hotel on election night last year and going to the bartender, and I said, "Did you vote?" He said, "No, I only vote in presidential years." Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, that was the case. And Utah has the lowest voter turnout in the nation because a lot of people think races are not competitive, but oftentimes they are. And I think this is going to be one of those competitive ones, and Democrats and independents are going to turn out.
Yeah.
You know, the interesting dynamic here in our last moments is Matheson has always sort of defied normal election political prognostication and, you know, what we would expect.
Right.
And so can Doug do the same thing? We'll see.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I'm joined by Chris Blake and Peter Caroon. Stay tuned.
Filling in for Speaker Hughes, I'm Chris Blake on the right.
Filling in for Senator Jim DeBacchus, I'm Peter Caron on the left.
Natalie Gochner sitting in for Natalie Gochner, and I represent the political center. Welcome to both sides of the aisle. We want to talk about the Boy Scouts of America relationship with the LDS Church. The data would show that there's 430,000 LDS Boy Scouts of the roughly 2.6 million Scouts in the organization. So a huge chunk of this body. When I see what's happening with the LDS Church's reaction to the allowance of gay Scout leaders into the organization, you can just see the writing on the wall. You can see a church that has the means and ability to create their own program, and a church that's frustrated that the scouting organization is only in, you know, basically Canada and the United States and a worldwide church. And you can see them figuring out a way to decouple themselves. Chris, are you seeing it that way?
I think you've nailed it, Natalie. I'm reading the statement here, Eric Hawkins said, considering creating its own international program for boys separate from the Boy Scouts of America, I don't think there's any question there considering it. What the Boy Scouts have done for the LDS Church is they've shifted the legal PR battles from the BSA national to the individual chartering organizations. Mm-hmm. So if I'm the LDS Church, why stick around and take those hits? I think it's time. I think it's appropriate. But I think there's the church will do a great programs if they decide mm-hmm. to create it. But, you know, there's, I'm sure, a lot of discussion that has to go into this. The church has been a longtime supporter of the Boy Scouts of America program, and I think they do love it and respect it. And so it'll be a difficult decision, but I would not be surprised in the least.
A lot of religious liberty collision going on here. And it used to be the word on the street was that the LDS Church was so financially commingled with the Boy Scouts of America in terms of property ownership and things that it would be very difficult to decouple. But I think they'll find a way.
And as the Democratic Party, we think the Boy Scouts decision was the right one. And we recognize that the LDS Church and the Boy Scouts have had a long-term relationship. And we think it would be a shame to see that go away, especially since their national board did allow some exemptions for religious organizations.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. I'm sitting here in the studio with people who are not Eagle Scouts, if I understood off here.
Yeah, I was a horrible scouter, so yeah.
And Peter, were you ever in the scouting program?
I was a Crow Scout.
I got my Weebelo. I don't know if that counts. Yeah.
Well, so. And I obviously have no... My son was an Eagle Scout, has a beautiful bench in Murray Park that he made for his Eagle project, and so I've been a beneficiary of, you know, a lot of the things that come from that. But I will tell you that one of the things that's troubling to me is that... Well, actually, maybe it's good news, Chris, but there was so much community engagement. And I used to go around our neighborhood, my husband, getting the donations for Friends for Scouting. And maybe there's a collective cheer that we don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. No, and I don't think – I think what the Boy Scouts have stood for important ideals, just as you point out, volunteering service. You know, if I was an Eagle Scout, I'd recite the Scout Oath right now, which I can't do. But
you'd shake with the left hand,
exactly.
If I remember right.
But there are a lot of great things and ideals and virtues that the scouting program has trumpeted and pushed forward, and that shouldn't be forgotten in all this. I don't think anybody thinks this Boy Scouts have done a poor job, but the world is changing. And but I think if the church were to move forward, that would be an important component. I mean, service is an important component for the LDS Church, and I think we would see that at any type of program mm-hmm. for our youth. We would continue to see that extension into our community to benefit members and non-members alike.
Yeah. If I'm the Boy Scouts of America, I get ready for some restructuring.
Yeah, things will probably change, but hopefully they'll continue on in the fashion they have, helping young kids, getting them out of the house, off their computers and their eye machines and whatever else they're playing with, and getting out in the wilderness and learning about government, learning about being good citizens.
Yeah. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Natalie Gochner. I am joined by Chris Blake and Peter Caron. Talking about restructuring, let's go to redistricting. And I guess a Utah policy poll, I think it was 2/3. Does that sound right, Chris?
I think it was about 65, yeah.
Yeah, about 2/3 of the population they polled said that they would like an independent commission to do redistricting in this state. Peter, that's right in line, but I'm guessing something you like.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely. one of the biggest problems in our nation right now is that our politicians in Washington don't work together. And one of the reasons is because they're so entrenched in their districts, which have been gerrymandered. It's both Republicans and Democrats who have done it. In Utah, obviously, it's the Republicans. Back in the 90s, we used to have 53% of the vote as Democrats in this state, and now we only have roughly 16% in the legislature, and a lot of that's because of redistricting. Every time redistricting came about, the Democrats would lose between 3 and 5% of our seats, and it's not good for our nation. It leads to a division amongst politicians. They're not working together. The only people they're beholden to is their own political parties rather than the citizens. So I'd love to see independent redistricting. We did it in Salt Lake County, worked well, and we think we should do it on the state level.
Chris, I'm guessing you disagree.
Well, I do, but from a different perspective. Our state constitution puts this power in the state legislature, and so I think that's an important power and one that they will continue to exercise. My issue on this is that it's much more nuanced than this. Mm-hmm. Peter talks about that the politics are entrenched. Well, is there any difference in the Senate? And yet the Senate isn't gerrymandered, I mean, other than state boundaries. Mm-hmm. The issue of what is a good district is really kind of a falsehood. We as Americans are redistricting ourselves at some level. We're moving. Mm-hmm. If I'm a liberal Democrat, I'm moving to the avenues. I'm moving to Salt Lake City. If I'm a conservative or Republican, I'm moving to South Jordan and Lehigh. And we're segregating ourselves. So what is a competitive district? Is a competitive district a 50-50 district? Is a competitive district 70-30? Do we want to combine the avenues in Provo to get a competitive district? Because that's what you're going to have to do to make those two areas competitive. And yet those are not communities of interest. There are so many competing factors here. Yeah. I think our legislature has done a fantastic job with this.
Chris, have you been behind the scenes after a census when redistricting occurs with all your legislative experience and seen the sausage being made?
Sort of. The one that I got to participate in, unfortunately, I would have loved to have been involved, but left in 2011. We did create the four-seat plan when that was a point of discussion, and so I had the involvement from that perspective. Mm-hmm. But so I've had some on the peripheries more than right in the heart and center.
And if I'm not mistaken, I don't think any of our congressional representatives live in Salt Lake County, which has roughly 40% of the population of the state and certainly has a lot of issues that are different from the rest of the state. And nobody's representing this area.
Yeah, it's a great point. I have to claim my naivete. Maybe the listeners will forgive me for that. But my recollection is if you live in Holiday, Utah, there's like three districts that come together right there. I think it's weird.
Well, but at some point, these districts, you know, one of the other issues that people don't talk about a lot is we have one man, one vote. I'm not suggesting that's a bad thing. But when you have to equalize these districts down to zero population difference, you're going to have these kind of boundaries. I mean, these counties or these areas don't neatly fit. I mean, if we had Salt Lake County has a million plus people. So Salt Lake County is going to be the divider. You have to create it because you can't have a district. A congressional district is probably about 700,000 to 800,000 people. So Salt Lake County has to be split. And so they don't neatly fit. And so there's going to be a place that becomes the divider, whether it's Salt Lake County, whether it's Juab County, it doesn't matter. We're going to have to split up those lines in order to get one man, one vote, equal representation in each district.
But unfortunately, you see situations like Tooele, for example, where they have nobody who in the past has lived in that district as a representative or in that county as a representative. So unfortunately, when you have a one-party state, you have all one group making the decisions. The good ideas don't get challenged. The bad ideas don't get challenged. And we end up with what I think is not good government.
If I had to bet on this, I would guess that our legislature keeps this power squarely in their hands.
To the victor go the spoils.
Yeah,
right?
But I would also say that in a state that is a one-party state like ours, that has such a predominance of Republicans, I think it's very dangerous. And so I would err on the side of having an independent commission in a state that's not competitive.
Good.
That's from the center. Okay, let's do some other things. A big July, August are really important months, even before that, for leadership in our state, where we have Governor Herbert taking over the realms of the powerful National Governors Association, Kirk Bramble taking over the realms. Am I getting this right?
Of National Conference of State Legislators.
Hugely important organization.
Absolutely. Both of these organizations represent governors, try to bring together ideas and discussion and policy from those types of groups. It's a major coup for both of them. I don't know if we've ever had. I'm sure we have, but Governor Herbert has taken over as officially the chair of the National Governors Association. And this week in Seattle, National Conference of State Legislatures is meeting, and Senator Bramble will become the chair of that organization.
And not but a few months ago that Mayor Becker took over, is it the League of Cities?
Yes, on the national level as well. Yeah. So we have the triumvirate here.
there
we're
you
getting
go,
all
Utah.
All the top positions going to Utah, and I think that reflects well on the state, and hopefully will bring some attention to the state.
So, Peter, how do you read Mayor Becker being in this competitive campaign season when he's a leader among mayors?
Well, obviously, that's an issue. Frankly, you want to be back on home turf when you're having an election. So this probably, in terms of the national stage, is probably good for Utah. But in terms of his reelection, it probably makes it a little bit tougher. So I think he's obviously got some issues going on, as we've seen in the polls. But, he's done a great job, I think, representing us on the national level.
We're eyeing in now on the primary election. I believe it's August 11th. Have I got that right in my head?
I got my ballot. I've got to get it sent in, but I don't, it's coming up here.
But it appears that very quickly we'll be in a two-person race between Jackie Biskupski and Mayor Becker, and I think the volume will turn up tremendously at that point.
I do as well, and I think one of the things we've seen is the independent expenditures coming into this race as well. We've seen it on the national level with groups like the Kochs. Now we're seeing money getting into the local level. Even where there are campaign limits on the city races, we're seeing outside money coming in. And I'm not sure that's a good thing for politics.
Chris, have you been seeing the billboards go up on the Salt Lake City mayor's race?
I have. I found it interesting that this group decided, if I understood them correctly, they put up a billboard basically for all the candidates other than Mayor Becker. So, but the beauty here is with the laws we have in place, people know who put up those billboards, and they can judge whether that's an appropriate reflection of the race and whether they agree with that point of view or not. I, from a crass political perspective, I would think that was the best news Mayor Becker had in the last couple of weeks, is when that came out that this group had jumped in and was supporting Jackie Biskupski and others. And so I'm sure he'll leverage that to the hilt.
Yeah. One thing I do respect about Mayor Becker is he stood on principle on this billboard issue. And all I mean by that, whether you like billboards or not, but in his case, he's a planner. He doesn't like billboards, and he's never purchased the outdoor advertising on billboards that I'm aware of because he doesn't agree with the policy. So he's got a consistency in the way he does it. Now he's being hurt for that.
Yeah, that's very true. But again, going back just to the money side of it, I think we have too much money in politics, and I think we need to do something, whether it's on a local level, state level. Obviously, they're not going to do it on the national level, but we need to get money out of politics and get people back into politics. Utah has the lowest voter turnout amongst all the states except two or three, and we have the lowest voter turnout in 72 years, and now we're seeing just money taking over politics, and it's a bad thing.
Yeah. One more question for you, Peter, before we go to gripes. As the chairman of the Utah Democratic Party, the Salt Lake City race is a nonpartisan race, but the leaders are all Democrats. Do you just find yourself just wanting to be on the sidelines? How do you manage that?
I stay on the sidelines. I'd love all my candidates who are Democrats, and until there's one Democrat left, we stay out of those races.
Help them all as best you can.
Help them all. We're open to help anybody who needs help. We give it to them equally, and then we stay out of it. We don't pick favorites.
Very good. All right, it's time for us to go to our gripes. We're going to start out with Chris Blake, who tells me he's got a gripe. Right, ready.
I'm ready. I'm gonna knock my own party. I called him ridiculous a couple of weeks ago, and he's only amped it up since then. It's time for Donald Trump to get out of this race.
Oh my!
He's embarrassing all of us, and it saddens me that he's got the audience that he has. But it's time to get down and move on to serious candidates. Whether you like the candidates or not, or want to find somebody else, I'm fine. Donald Trump is a nut, and it's time for him to go.
People keep saying, what does it say about the Republican Party? My comment is, what does it say about America?
No, absolutely.
Go ahead.
Medicaid expansion. July 31st was supposed to be the deadline for our state leaders, our group of six, as they call themselves, to pass or find a solution to Medicaid expansion. Hasn't happened. We're now in our second year of no insurance for our citizens of Utah. Frankly, people are dying. People are not getting the health care they need. It's awful. We heard the word death panel back in the day from presidential candidates, and now we're seeing these people dying and still no Medicaid expansion. from our group of six who were supposed to come up with a solution.
Very good. It wouldn't be both sides of the aisle if we didn't talk about Medicaid expansion for just a minute.
Absolutely.
My gripe deals with the Book of Mormon Broadway play coming to Salt Lake City. I'll just tell a real brief story. My daughter and I went to London in March for a little trip, and I said, you know, let's go to the West End and see some plays. And I said, I'll get some Book of Mormon tickets for us. I always wanted to go to it just to be culturally literate. I'm active LDS, but, you know, it does. And you go to London, and it's all I Heart Mormon, you know, they really advertise it. My daughter said to me, Mom, I just have no interest in going. Have you read anything about it? And then she talks about the vulgar language and some of the, you know, innuendos in the name of humor. But it was really interesting. We didn't go. And it was a thing where my daughter sort of taught me a lesson that it's one thing to be culturally literate and another thing to be appropriate. And I think the play goes over the top. That's my gripe. Any quick reaction from you two?
I haven't seen it. It's always good to poke fun at yourself, but I have, from the people I've heard have seen it, they enjoyed it, but some of the profanity and innuendo.
A lot of active Mormons enjoy it, but it has a lot of vulgarity in it.
Yeah, right, left, and center agree, but I haven't seen it, so.
There we go. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, the program produced by Roger McDonough today. Thank you, Roger. Chris Blake has joined me from the right, Peter Kroon from the left. I'm Natalie Gochner. Thanks for listening.